anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard,
normal,
or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Roger that.
Hello and welcome to Anomaly. This is Jen and this is my microcast interview with my Nana. And we're going to talk about technology and how much it's changed since she was a little girl. Happy Mother's Day, by the way.
Thank you.
Is Mother's Day.
Thank you. I'm having a very nice Mother's Day.
Good. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in mostly in Brownsville, Texas and Corpus Christi. Actually, my father was a mover, and in 12 years, I went to 9 different schools to give you a pretty good idea. Each time, he would start a different business, and we would go into something else or go to some other. But mostly, it was the Valley and San Antonio where we stayed, and he did his thing.
And you grew up during the Depression, right?
Yes.
You were born in, what year were you born?
I was born in 33. It was just right on the edge of everything, you know. And the only thing I can remember about it is that we were very frugal in everything that we did. Everything was reused. Nothing was thrown out. You did with what you had because you didn't know when you would run into being able to use your, you had stamps that you could use for sugar and coffee and tires and stuff like that, gas, and that you, depending on where you lived and where you worked, was how much you got to spend on stuff like that. So we didn't do a lot of traveling around. It was mostly what you did at home and made fun out of it, you know. It wasn't, you weren't entertained like Schlitterbahn. You were not entertained with that. I mean, I went to town, like we lived in the rural area, and every 2 years, 2 or 3 years, we would go to town. And that was, and we would go down on the San Antonio Riverwalk and go to a movie at the Majestic. That was our big outing. Of course, the Riverwalk's very different and the Majestic's very different right now.
You listened to radio shows when you were a little girl. Did you have favorite radio shows? Do you remember the War of the Worlds audio drama?
No, I do not. My father was one of these people that believed there's no such thing as space. There's no such thing as something underneath the ocean. That's all make-believe. We listened to, like, Fibber McGee and Molly.
What was that about?
It was about this man and wife that lived together, and he was very sloppy. And she was always trying to get him to clean up stuff. And he would try to open the closet door, and everything would fall out. And she would get after him for it. We listened to Mr. District Attorney, all kinds of things, but the thing to have to do with the future of the space or under, you know, in the ocean, that I wanted to get a Dick Tracy watch one time and he wouldn't let me wear it because he said that's ridiculous. You'll never see a picture on a watch. You can't transmit things that way. He was very down-to-earth guy, and he wouldn't let us go that far into it. Flash Gordon was out. Anything we watched like that, we had to go over to our friend's house.
Did you watch Flash Gordon, or did you listen to Flash Gordon,
yeah,
or watch Flash Gordon on at the movies?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we would, but we wouldn't share that with Mom and Dad. But we would share it with ourselves. Like, gosh, wouldn't that be something, you know, to be able to fly in the, with the, back then they had Flash Gordon with just a you would if you were going to go scuba diving on his back, a tank. and he would just take off and go up to the sky, which was a little bit ridiculous, but we thought, well, that would really be neat, you know. And now I'm more to, as in my adult years, like, forget space. I want to go down underneath the ocean. There's something there to eat. There's something there alive. And I can't see spending billions of dollars to go to the space for what we don't know. Is it there? And in the ocean, it is there. We just need to explore it.
Yeah. That's interesting that you say that. There is a few shows and movies about ocean exploration. The movie, for instance, like, well, it's also based on a book, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Did you see that with Kirk Douglas?
Yes, I did.
Was it Kirk Douglas? Yes.
Was it?
Yeah.
I don't remember who it was, but I do remember it was a very good show. And that stuff seemed possible, you know, that... Wait just a minute. We got a dog.
There you go. We're recording this on the back porch of my parents' house in the country. And you may hear a horse in the background, chickens and birds.
And there's dogs. Yeah.
And anyway, what was I talking about?
You were talking about seeing 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Oh, yeah. And that the stuff down there seems possible because you can make food out of it. I mean, you start with seaweed and you go from there. No telling what you could do with the coral. Besides just ruining it, and we are ruining the coral in so many different places. And when the coral's dead, it's dead. And instead of making the coral more prolific and trying to find out what is in it, what makes it grow like that down there in the bottom of the ocean.
I think it's pretty.
I remember when Sputnik went up in the... And I was... we were clearing brush at the time, and so there was a crew of us out there picking up sticks and piling them so we could get it ready to cultivate. And Sputnik had been up in there, and there was an elderly Mexican man that was working with me. And he told me that what was going to happen was we were going to go up there and just keep turning the earth with all of our exploration stuff, and sooner or later, what was in Texas would be in Africa, as far as weather's concerned.
Yeah.
And the African weather would be somewhere else. That it was not right for us to be up there in space fooling with things, that it was better
left. So there was a lot of, like, conspiracy theories about what Sputnik was and why it was up there, and it was at a scary time.
Yes, it was.
We weren't sure what Russia was up to.
No, that's true, yeah. And you think, okay, if they're up there, are they watching me? You know, we didn't have any idea what was going on at the time. I was about 19 or 20 years old and had a couple of kids at home by that time. And what will a kid's future be, you know? Where will it go from here? And I didn't realize that in the future, the billions and billions and billions of dollars we put into going to space. Mm-hmm. And when there's live things, even, you know, in the water, that we can make use of.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that we're learning from space, too, though. Do you remember the space race and how Russia would... you know, put something out like Sputnik, and then we would like one up them and do something else. And do you remember that? And what was it like to see it on TV? Was it exciting?
Yeah, it was exciting as long as we could stay ahead. But when it looked like that, I guess one of the first things was the first one we sent off. I can't recall the name of the first one that we sent up into space. A few years later, there was somebody walking on the moon and all of that, and we were just flabbergasted, you know. And my dad was still saying, it's all a myth. He was getting older, and he was kind of set in his ways, and it just, you weren't about to turn him. But then at that time, I still was saying, I think it's a waste of time. I, you know, you can't get it to where I can grab a train with a $5 ticket and go there. But I can, then if you figure out, they've got ships that go down the ocean very quickly.
Well, a lot of the technology used in oceanic exploration was first developed probably in space, mm-hmm. really. Yeah, granddad was your dad, who's my great-grandfather. You were talking about how he was a little bit of a stick in the mud about technology and the space race and stuff. What was it like to see television for the first time?
Well, the television for the first time I saw was probably 1946 or 47. It had a 7-inch screen, and the TV was probably 30 inches towards the back, and then around the case was maybe like 24 inches or 30. It was a very strange looking thing, but it had a 7-inch screen in the front. And we would gather at night. The neighbors would come over, and we'd watch it. Cuckoo Fran and Ollie and the news and wrestling, and that was what you had on TV at that time. And it was just amazing. And my dad would watch it too, even though it was something that was not real. And then what was the other question you asked?
Well, I remember a story about how Elvis came on television one time. And he was just put off for it.
He was on the Ed Sullivan show.
Yeah.
And he started gyrating and flopping his knees, and Dad made us turn it off so that we couldn't watch Elvis. That was not proper.
It wasn't wholesome. Didn't he unplug it?
It wasn't wholesome. But there again, we could go over to the neighbors after they got TV. But we had to wait there until there were more TVs in the neighborhood. They were very scarce at the time. You had to have a lot of friends to be able to see everything. But then we'd go over there and watch Elvis. And there wasn't nothing. And we couldn't see anything wrong with Elvis. We just liked the
music.
The rhythm.
He was hot.
The rhythm, yeah. Yeah, right. And to us, he was very good looking. You know, we were all three about the same, just a few years difference. If anyone was going to tell, it was my baby sister. She would be the one to tell because she didn't see.
They always rat us out, the babies in the family, because you're the oldest in the family.
Yeah, yeah. But it was. I think growing up in those years, I learned a lot that kids now will never know. They won't know the freedom of being able to walk out behind the house in the pasture and enjoying nature and what's going on. The difference in grasshoppers, which is a very simple thing. Difference in lizards, because they can't go off by themselves. It's too dangerous. They go down the street, will they come back? Get on a bicycle and take off? And where do they go? You know, will they be back? Do we have to go with them or follow them? All those freedoms that we had, we get up early in the morning and walk 2 or 3 miles to school. And in the evening, you'd all walk home together. And I always wondered why they put the school so far away from the houses, but it seemed that way.
Well, speaking of that, you have told me stories about what it was like to walk to school. You had a horse, right? Or, you know, you went to school with a lantern.
Yes, we would start off with a lantern. And then you would have to go through pastures if you were going to go the shortcut. And there were neighbors that had feisty little bulls in them and stuff. And we would try to watch out for them. And turn the light off if we saw them coming and sit down behind a bush and wait till they were gone. But a lot of times we would get out there and be caught between two herds of cattle. My sister next to me and I, we were kind of brave. We would just go on. But my littlest sister was afraid to go through them, so we would have to wait for her and bring her up. But as soon as we got out of the pastures, then we started meeting kids coming from the other direction. And some started out far earlier than we did. We only had about an hour's walk to school. And there were some kids that had come 3 hours walking to school from way back in the pasture. And then in the evenings, they would turn the light on before they got home. where we didn't. We could just come straight home. And now it's like you wouldn't dare do that. The place that my dad had, they called it Sandy Hill. And now that's subdivision. That's up there instead of what I remember being up there. And one time I stopped, I was about 15 years old, and the cattle were stampeding. I didn't know it. I just know they weren't supposed to go out of the pen. So I slammed the gate on them and on my hand at the same time. But the main thing was I stopped, and they just started going in circles inside the pen. And they were milk cows, but something scared them. Might have been a snake or a hawk or something like that. But anyway, that was exciting. Yeah. And we would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and feed the cows and see that the milk was put up. And then we'd go to school, and then we'd come back and milk cows and bring them up and feed them and milk them and send them back to the pasture and start all over again the next morning before we went to school.
Sure, make the next shoot.
And I remember going, he fed them a bran, and it's kind of a growth thing for them. And it was inside of a real warm room, and I'd go in there and go to sleep. You would too at 4 o'clock in the morning.
I could pause it so you can say bye.
During World War II, you're talking about?
No. Arms race.
World War II, that it was like imminent, like imminently here.
Yeah.
It was taken very seriously for air drills, air war drills or air warden drills. And they had these people walking the streets that would show you where to go when an air raid would come in. And at school, one of the things that you would do would get down on your knees with your head covered under the desk. Not leave. I mean, you would stay there. That's where your refuge was in that school. And the possibility of them coming in through Florida or San Diego or someplace like that.
The Gulf Coast of Texas?
Yeah, Gulf Coast, yes.
They even found one there. They destroyed one, a submarine, Japanese Midget, I think it was called.
A Midget?
Mm-hmm. They captured one in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
It's at the Admiral Nimitz Museum in Fredericksburg, Texas.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. I went to see the Admiral Nimitz ship, yeah. The museum
in Fredericksburg.
Yes, it's very, very interesting. Bring back a lot of stuff that you've forgotten, you know. But it was not something that I pictured thousands of miles away. Yeah. I mean, my sisters and I would just cuddle together, you know, especially if Walter Winchell was on the radio.
It was Walter Winchell.
America is at war. And he would scare you to death when he'd give the reports. And we would just cover up our heads, and we didn't want to hear it, you know.
I remember you said that when...
this is my mom.
Mamaw said, when y'all were listening to the radio, and they said that Pearl Harbor had been bombed, you said she cried, that scared you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It was a terrible shock. Because no one knew that it was coming to Pearl Harbor. I mean, we had so many guys over there, and everything was supposed to be set up to where we were protecting that part. And here comes the Japanese in there and just wiped out so many, you know, that it was such a shock. America was not prepared for war. We were short of rubber. We were short of aluminum. We were short of things to build planes with. We would collect stuff at the schools, scrap, and
try to take the bit out of her mouth. Really.
And you would take the aluminum foil off of chewing gum and roll it up, and the classroom that got the biggest roll of aluminum would win a ice cream party or something like that. And everybody brought scrap, and you had aluminum scrap, iron scrap, you know, steel scrap. There was piles to put it in at school. And you got so many stamps for so many tires. And at the end of that, you weren't getting any more tires. And anything like erasers, you couldn't buy. It was an eraser on a pencil, a very small eraser. But there were not a whole bunch of like erasers that you could buy extra, art erasers or pencil erasers, because that was all going to the war effort. Women went to work in the factories because there were no men. They were all gone. And it was, there were a lot of times there were three and four boys or two or three boys killed from one family before they realized we have to keep one down on the farm. And so if you were the last one, then you stayed home. And the rest of them went to war. Because that was the way it was. America was America, and we stood for each other. We didn't have, oh, they're a Democrat, or they're...
containment breach. My son Aaron. Okay, mommy's talking to Nina.
And so, I don't know why.
I love you.
But anyway, it was a very interesting time that you didn't. My mother had a saying at the time, and that's living with my grandkids and great grandkids today. Make it over, throw it out, make it do or do without, and that's what we did. If it like you had so much rubber, you could get so many rubber-soled shoes, and then there was no rubber, so they made them out of rope, and they didn't last you long. They would wear out real quickly, but you had to have something for the sole of your shoes. Some kids would come to school with cardboard in the bottom of their shoes because they didn't have stamps to buy shoes. Everything was very limited because we weren't prepared to fight like that. So we all had to go together, and we didn't care. There was no division in the country. The president was right as far as the common man was concerned. We all worked together for one goal, win this war. That was all there was to it.
The only thing we have to fear.
Huh?
The only thing we have to feel,
yeah,
is fear itself.
That's Roosevelt. Yes, Roosevelt said that, and it was true. Yeah. Because we could scare ourselves to death, but if we get out there and work and save for our country, then we were working together. And there was a... You're supposed to have a chicken in every pot. And you would start soup today with a big chicken. And when you finished eating today, then in the morning, Mom would add different stuff to it, and you'd have a different kind of soup. Same chicken.
That's different than it is now. Everybody is split.
Oh, yes.
The country is divided. And
yes.
You seem...
And if you divide, if you pull against each other, there's no way you'll stand up against it. If the people in Congress and the Senate and the House, all these people don't pull together, we can't stand. And that's what will happen to America. It will fall apart. Because our Democrats and Republicans are not pulling for the country. They're pulling for me a Democrat or me a Republican. I don't care about the country. I care about my party. That's why we either need another party or we need to go together and build this country back.
What about the arms race? What was it like during that time when everyone was afraid that Russia and the United States were going to nuke each other and the whole world out of existence?
Well, that's when we felt very vulnerable. But as far as the arms race, I must not have been old enough or smart enough to realize what it was actually coming to. I mean, like the bombing of Hiroshima.
You were too distracted with a bunch of kids. I remember that storeroom at the end of the garage with all of a sudden there's a lot of canned goods in there.
Oh, yes, yes.
And I'm thinking, okay, this is because, and you told me, because of what was going on in Cuba and that there was nuclear weapons.
That was after,
and to me, that was scary because it was directed directly at us.
Yes.
But it wasn't really safe because the storage room in the garage stepped down maybe 6 inches above ground level. So, but we had plenty to eat if we made it through that part.
Yes, but see, that came after World War II.
Yes.
Yes, in World War II, the worst thing was the bomb in Hiroshima. As teenagers and kids, we had no idea the destruction that that would bring. But there was, we had to stop. America had to stop what was happening, or we would have lost America. That's what it boils down to. And nobody that was, if you were living in that time, you know that is the only way it had to end. It had to end that way. But now, the wars in between, and wars upon wars, they tell us in the Bible that's going to be wars upon wars. But the one you were speaking of was in our back door. Yeah. It was something that could actually happen, that we could actually have somebody come to our front door and say,
Mom,
do you remember that poem that I wrote about, will there ever be a World War III?
Yes.
Will the United States ever look like Nagasaki?
Yes, exactly.
That's the only part of it I remember. But I was thinking how devastating that was. But I was probably maybe 11 when I learned about that.
Yeah.
But it was scary to me then. And then when the Bay of Pigs came around, it was like, wow, it's back again and it's close.
Yes.
It's like right over
And was our country pulling together?
No.
They were going against the president, and the president was going against him. And the president has only so much power. The power is not in him. I don't care who you elect for president. His power is not as powerful as you think it is. He's either told he's right or he's wrong, but he don't have near the power that he thinks he does.
What happened during the Bay of Pigs? Yeah, but the Cuban Missile Crisis. What is that? When Nana started collecting all the canned goods,
yeah,
and tell us about the drills he went through.
Like the Panama Canal, you know, it's right.
Yeah, there was line after line in a storage room that had nothing in it but maybe some canned goods from the garden and stuff like that. There was row after row of canned goods and things that would last like forever, and
you could walk down in 3 steps.
Yeah. What else did you ask me about the Bay of Pigs?
Just the drills you went through in school.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is my mom, by the way, Nana's daughter.
They taught us duck and cover. You remember that, Papa? You would get under your desk, like what she said happened in World War II. It was the same with us, but nuclear. It's not going to help you.
No.
You get
no.
under your desk, you tuck your head between your knees, and you put your arms over the top of your head.
And the point to a nuclear war is if you survive it, if you go down in a 20-foot hole and you come out, what have you survived?
Exactly.
To be?
Yeah.
Science fiction is really good about bringing topics up like this, because people won't really talk about it unless it's in a story of some type.
Yeah.
You know, where the moral of the story is hidden in a narrative, like, you know, like a science fiction story.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes is a story where a man, all he wants to be is alone with his books so that he could read. And
remember that one.
You remember that one?
Uh-huh.
He gets what he wants. The whole world is destroyed. He's the only living person on the planet. Mm-hmm. And he's alone with his books. He's in a library. He can't wait to start reading his books. And his glasses break.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what you get.
Yes.
I mean, you may survive, but that's what happens.
Yes,
you're not
exactly.
really alive. If that's
what do you come out to?
And that's That's the one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is how technology progressed so much since you were a little girl, and you see so many different things and where we've come from there. You know, you're using an iPad now.
An
iPad.
Yes.
And you're doing really well with it.
Yeah.
And your grandchildren and your great grandchildren are teaching you how to use it. You're using it, and you're on Facebook.
Sometimes I wonder when I sit there and look at it. I just wonder, how did I come from a chief tablet that we rode in school
to a wagon?
And yes,
right.
yes,
in
yes.
A wagon,
big chief.
When I went to high school, my dad would take us to school in an old milk truck. He'd pick up all the kids he could on the way to high school, and we would the whole neighborhood would be in the same truck. and my dad would take them to school. If something happened at school, he would come and pick everybody up and bring us home. But they're not, the communities are not like that anymore. You couldn't be positive that this guy down the street can go pick up all these girls and bring them to where he's supposed to bring them unless you know him. Well, now neighbor next to neighbor don't know. You know, who are they? Where did they come from? Do they have kids? Where do the kids go to school? You know, how old are the kids? Where did they come from? You don't have any of that we had in a community back in those years.
That's true, but now with the Twitter and Facebook and all that,
that's
when the kids at the school, like you said, Granddad would go and take the kids home, you would instantly know what was going on. Everyone in the community, because of the to the new technology of communication, everyone would know right away what was wrong at the school and what was needed.
Yeah.
But what you're saying about community, I agree with. Yes. It's not there anymore.
No. And it was about 1955 or 1954 before I even got a phone in our place out here.
Tell me about that, because you have lots of stories about how it was a crank phone and you had a party line.
Yes, there were certain neighbors, and if you wanted to reach X neighbor, then you would crank it three times, 1, 2, 3, and that neighbor would, and then all of a sudden you'd hear other neighbors picking it up.
Like a winder on the phone, you would crank the phone up, right? Would that charge the phone?
To make it charge up, yeah. It had a battery. Yeah, it had a battery. And it was like, everybody had a battery for their phone. And so you would be using your battery. But the other neighbors would come in while you're using your battery to try to get a message to somebody, and they say, while you're on the phone, you know, I'm going to ask Sarah to bring potatoes Sunday night or whatever. Well, I'm the one using my battery to keep my phone up to try to get to my mother-in-law or my mother or whoever I was trying to call. And then it got to where it was 5-party line. There was only 5 of us on it, and it was
now, this could be like your friend would be on the phone when you'd pick it up.
Oh, yeah.
And you would hear, tell me about the lady that you would pick up the phone and she's always on the phone.
Oh, you don't say that.
Was she German?
No, she was Polish. Don't tell me that.
So you would pick up the phone and that's what you would hear. Don't tell me that.
Yeah, and I would hate to interrupt her because she was very interesting. And then somebody would tell her something.
So you were a voyeur.
Yes, yeah. And it was her battery. But it was like, the people on the phone were like anywhere from a 100 feet to 5 miles apart. And if somebody had a fire, then you would just keep on till you got somebody. And then you would say that there was a fire and they'd start rounding up people that would come and help. But we didn't have a fire department. We had to just do for ourselves. Lost a lot of barns and a lot of animals that way, homes. And then you would help the neighbor build a home. You know, it was just different than it is now.
You know, back to Granddad, your dad, Nana. It's funny that you said that he thought space was a waste of time, because when I was little, he's the one who told me I was going to be the first woman in space.
Exactly.
And he bought me a Sesame Street coloring book that has a space shuttle in it. And didn't he go and visit? Well, did he go to NASA and Johnson Space Center? Or did he go to Cape Canaveral Florida?
Cape Canaveral.
He brought me back a ring that was a space shuttle ring.
Yeah.
And I still have it today. And I wore it to honor Sally Ride, who was the actual first woman in space, who at first disappointed me because she beat me there when I was little. But then she became my hero because she was the first woman in space.
Yeah,
I still have that ring.
Yeah.
And it was because of Granddad.
Isn't that weird?
It's funny how people change, his perspective in life had changed. From that's a waste of time to encouraging his great-granddaughter.
I guess I don't want to insult the gentleman listening, but there are times when men can say, I believe in this, and damned if they'll straighten out and believe something else. They're not going to tell you something else. They're going to say, I believe it this way, and they stick with it. And deep down inside their heart, they've changed their mind. But you have to search for that. And that my dad never told me it was great, you know, that about the space and all this kind of stuff. But it was easy for him to talk to you about it. It was easy.
He'd gone through a lot. He lost the love of his life.
Yes. Yeah.
And he was battling an illness.
Oh, yeah.
So his perspective on everything changed.
Oh, yes, definitely. And he could accept what was happening because the ever-present thing in our life is change. And he did teach me things like that. He taught me the basics of life. My mother, too. That's what they lived by. And if you sat down to supper and it was biscuits and gravy, it was a party with biscuits and gravy. That would be on a Sunday night. And then all of a sudden, the next Sunday night.
Sunday supper was supposed to be a big thing.
And then you'd come to the next time, you'd have ham with it, or you'd have bacon or salt pork. That was fantastic. You know, it was just, that was a big meal. We didn't run to HEB and get what we wanted. It took us, from where we lived to San Antonio, it would take us at least 35, 40 minutes or longer, depending on what we had to do, to get to the grocery store. And we would go about once a month, maybe. And, Daddy didn't go to HB. Daddy went to Handy Andy. And I don't care where Handy Andy was, that's where we went to get groceries. I don't know what he had with Handy Andy.
I even went with Granddad to Handy Andy. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you embarrassed him so bad.
Yes.
What?
Yes, you did.
Yes.
Down
you
the
called
aisle.
You No, it was one of us, wasn't it? We were calling him Granddad, but we couldn't say Granddad.
No,
so we said Gag Gag.
I think it was Susie.
It was Susie, that's
I
right.
I would never say Gag.
My aunt, my sister. She got lost, well, not really lost, an aisle away, and she was screaming, Gag Gag, Gag Gag. Where are you? And he was so humiliated.
We don't have just a audience in the United States. We have a worldwide audience. We'd like to say we have dozens of listeners all over the world.
Oh, wow.
But some of our listeners are in Sweden and in Norway.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yes.
Granddad was of Swedish descent. And
yes.
So are you.
My grandmother was still speaking Swedish when I was probably about 4 or 5 years old. And especially if she got mad. And then she would look at me and say, oh, that was not good.
Did she have a great...
She was a great cook. She cooked the best Swedish bread and Swedish fruits. I mean, desserts that I ever ate. She was... her name was Ma. We called her Ma. And her name
was
Olga. Olga Westling. They had come over very, very early, her family. And she did not speak English. My grandfather married her, and she was just beginning to speak English. And he kind of learned to speak it, too, in broken Swedish. And between the two of them, they figured out how to communicate.
That's awesome. They lived in a town called New Sweden in Texas, and they had a candy
Austin,
shop. It's just east of Austin. I went there.
Yes, yes.
There's still a church there.
Yes.
I have her Bible
yes.
that she got for confirmation that came from that church in
yes,
New Sweden.
Yeah, we still
it burned down,
Bible.
And it's a new building, so
oh.
it's not the same one. But it's still from the early
New
1900s.
Sweden,
but anyway.
There were a lot of relatives that lived in New Sweden of the Westling. Descent. It's been so many years. I don't know if there's how many or if there's any left. I remember my grandmother was very aged when I saw her at the last reunion. So I'm not sure. But there were a lot of Westlings. There probably still are in New Sweden.
Yeah. Thank you very much for humoring me. I know you're just kind of like, what are we going to talk about?
I know.
But I appreciate.
If you think of something that we could, you know, fill in with or talk
yeah,
about.
We'd like to talk about more stuff in the future.
Yeah.
But that's really all I wanted to talk about is just like you said that people don't like to change. And that's really the gist of this. We've changed so much.
I am changing today. I change every day. As you mature, you change. The things that I did when I was young or middle-aged, I have different thoughts on them now.
If you start out walking with a lantern before daylight to school in the mornings, and you now are on the computer, you have your own iPad.
Yes.
That's a huge,
and I
a huge step for mankind.
Yes,
exactly. What a good way to sum it up, Mom. Thank you.
I saw pictures today on iPad that were taken last night. We used to take pictures to the drugstore and expect them back in 2 or 3 weeks, if we were lucky. Yeah.
And now you can see them on Facebook.
Yeah, right. The very next.
Instantly,
really. Yeah.
I should add you to our Anomaly Facebook group, Nana, so that you can talk to everybody. Because you're gonna have an instant fan following. I can just tell you that right now.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, thank you very much for talking to us.
Angela and Jen want to hear from you. Call 432-363-4742. Leave them a message. Support Anomaly through feedback and donations by visiting anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast.com.
Come in, Tommy.
Well, I woke up this morning.
Yes, yes.
And I looked outdoors.
Outside, you mean?
I could tell my milk cow. I could tell by the way she looked.
Tell me more.
If you see my milk cow, ooh, drive her on home.
What's the matter, boy? You getting low on milk?
I ain't had no milk and butter, ooh, since my cow's been gone.
What's this word butter? I never heard of it before.
Uh-huh. Well, you've got to treat me right.
Yes, yes.
Day by day. Get out your little prayer book. Get down upon your knees and pray, cause you're gonna need, gonna need my help someday.
Talk on, boy. I'm right with you now. Right with you.
Yeah, you're going to be sorry. Do you treat me this way?
Yes. Come in, Brother Bernard. Gentlemen, that is Junior Bernard and his standard guitar. Yeah. That is 2 more payments and it'll be his.
To get along with you.
Are you sure?
And now I'm gonna tell you what I'm gonna do.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna stop crying, gonna leave you alone.
How you know?
If you don't think I'm leaving, you can count the days I'm
count
gone.
Count to 10 and hold your temper.
You're gonna need my help someday.
Oh!
Yeah, you're going to be sorry. Do you treat me this way?
We like stars, all the stars in the sky, especially the stars you give us on iTunes. To us, you are the biggest star in the cosmos. Go to iTunes and give us a rating. Thanks.
You can hear Anomaly on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, iPad, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones, on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You can also catch the latest episodes of our favorite shows on Stitcher. Podcasts like Take Him With You, Tales from the Mouse House, Waffle On, Upper Memory Block, Treks in Sci-Fi, Ladies of Leet, and much more.
Visit AnomalyPodcast.com. That's AnomalyPodcast.com.